Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio 866. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Chris Calamita. What is up, good sir?
Not a heck of a lot, Kevin. How about yourself?
Oh, you know, it's a strange week to have a job. Nothing like a holiday being on a Tuesday. That has led to some recording shenanigans on Stunt Granny's part here. But you and I here, you know, even if we did the show on our normal night, I'd have to say that anytime that there's a pay-per-view, it tends to take precedence over everything else.
Yeah, it does, absolutely.
And especially one as large as Money in the Bank here. And, you know, for the main event, we had quite a long match between Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa taking on the Usos, the so to speak, Uso or Bloodline Civil War, not Uso Civil War. Good gravy. So yeah, we got the and you know, we got the finish that I feel like we had talked about for a while.
Yes, we did. We got Jey Uso pinning Roman Reigns clean in the middle of the ring. The right decision for where they're going. We've mentioned this. I've mentioned this whole time, this whole build-up. The idea of putting a career tag team wrestler in the main event of SummerSlam, you know, in that big of a building, even though the tickets are pretty much almost all already sold, was a risk, and it is a risk. But I think they should be commended for taking a risk and playing this thing out to its logical end. You know, this 3-year story. Yes, Roman Reigns and Jey Uso have headlined pay per views in the past, but that was 3 years ago in the Thunderdome, so that basically doesn't count.
Yes, yeah. I think anyone with any level of logic in their brain would anything that happened during that era definitely gets an asterisk, so to speak.
Yeah, and that's which is why it is so weird, because they're so hesitant to go back and show clips from that era that we're not really getting the when they do their video packages, we're not even really getting the full story. Because we're not chronicling that period of 2020 very well. That really explains why Jey Uso at least felt he was so committed to being at the side of Roman Reigns.
It definitely feels like it's been an intentional choice to avoid that stuff. Although, I guess I am a little bit surprised. I felt like some of that stuff took place backstage and that they could still use some of that footage.
Yes, I mean, some of it, whatever, maybe some of it was in the quick clips, but we're really just focusing on really what's happened in the last, you know, 6 months, really what's happened in the last 3 months since WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know, which is... You know, which is fine. Enough has happened. I think enough people remember how this whole thing began. It's not a difficult story to understand, even if you don't, if you checked out during that year.
Right.
And I don't blame anyone who did. And, you know, so this is, you know, it's really, the whole Bloodline story is hitting its logical conclusion. It really will, I assume, be the conclusion, because... You know, after SummerSlam, since the next upcoming B shows, including our Payback, which we're attending in Pittsburgh, are at least as of this moment, Roman Reignsless.
Yeah. Oh.
So, you know, this will pretty much wrap this whole thing up in a bow. Well, whatever happens here, I don't imagine Jey Uso will be winning the title.
Yeah, that would still be pretty surprising if he is the one to take the championship off of Reigns.
It would definitely be, but you know, this is them wrapping up their main storyline, really. it'll be interesting to see, you know, where they can even go from here. They've wrapped everything around this, and as we said ad nauseum, Roman really has no viable challengers left. You can argue Cody again and doing the unification deal with Seth, but beyond that, there's nothing really on the horizon. I imagine at the Survivor Series, they'll do War Games again, although I don't know how, or go back to brand supremacy.
Uh-oh.
Which would then force Roman and Seth in a match together anyway. So I don't think that's what they're actually going to do. But, yeah, and then Roman wouldn't defend the title. Well, there's probably a Saudi show in there. I imagine the fall. They usually go in October, November. So I guess that'll be the next time Roman defends the title. This is it. And as I kind of rambled a little bit there, but this is the climax of their 3-year storyline. And we've said it many, many times. Roman Reigns didn't really need to beat Cody Rhodes.
Oh.
But he did, and we are getting Jey Uso in the main event of SummerSlam. Now, of course, they're gonna call it a triple main event with whoever Seth Rollins is going to defend against, and Cody and Brock. We know that's coming.
Oh, and that's not even accounting for any women's matches
quadruple, quintuple, every match is the main event.
Gonna have to add a second night on to SummerSlam.
If at the end they feel like Cody and Brock is the bigger deal, so that actually goes last. I'm like, then again, why did Roman Reigns win at WrestleMania? But I don't think that's what will happen. I think that they will.
Oh, right.
They'll go full force ahead with Roman and Jey. I still like my idea of Jimmy and Solo at ringside with towels and whoever throws the towel on their man is the loser. You know, once again, harkens back to that first match between Roman and Jey, which they may or may not show any footage of, but it still takes the story full circle. So again, it is taking everything full circle. So it is, you know, easily the best stuff they've done in a decade. You know, everything that they did with the Usos and Sammy. That was the flaw of building the Cody at WrestleMania. He wasn't involved in all of that. They had their own, like, tangent deal. Like,
oh, right.
Based on, yeah, well, your dad. Which was the weak part of that whole thing. So, but once again, Cody. So we, don't say this is what we're left. What they did at Money in the Bank. I'm not going to say the tag match was the most exciting match of the entire night or anything.
Oh.
Little on the long side. Solo's nerve holds got a little bit of yawns for me.
so I
was watching it this morning after a night of drinking.
I was in a little more sober of a spot, but I'm also gonna say that I was okay doing lunch prep while watching this match because.
And then you came back, and then you came back, and Jimmy Uso was still in a nerve hold.
There were definitely some parts, much like the Kenny Omega Will Ospreay match. It maybe went a little bit longer than necessary. Like I started to, because I had watched the replay. I definitely was seeing the timestamp, and I saw what the end was, and I'm just like. Good gravy. Like, I was pretty shocked at the runtime for this one.
It didn't necessarily need it. Once again, as I said, there was a lot of slower points in the match. Now, the finishing stretch was really, really good. Really got the crowd into it. Because up to that point, you could argue that the main event was actually the quietest the crowd had been, been all night. Other than them singing "Stand Up if You Hate Roman," which was a bizarre moment, once again, that London crowd.
Yeah, I mean, they did get a big, the ending got a huge pop, for sure.
Yeah, but it was, once again, what they've got, invested in this whole run, you know, the equity they've built up, it felt like it took people a minute to realize what happened.
Oh.
Before they popped. They didn't pop until the announcement and the Usos' hands were raised, really.
Yeah, it's one of those ones where I just remember, I can only liken that to when Brock Lesnar beat The Undertaker.
Yes.
And, like, I started freaking out immediately, but there were so many people around me that were in that delayed response area where they're just like, hold on, what? Like, did this really just happen? And, you know, yeah, it was one of those things where just because, I mean, they really played up ahead of the match how long it had been since Roman Reigns had been pinned.
Yes.
Like Michael Cole, like, called out the number of days between, like, that he hasn't been pinned. And it was some absurd number. And, you know, yeah, Jey Uso finally pinned him. Like you said, no real shenanigans involved. It was kind of interesting, the whole, would you call it a justifiable low blow?
Well, Roman Reigns has done that before. And honestly, I think the first time Roman Reigns ever did, it may have been with Jay, the first time he ever did it.
Oh, yeah. They definitely made mention of it being a dose of Roman's own medicine.
Because he's done it a number of times, and the first time he did it was the first. If you think about it, it is a really, really, really illogical thing to do, and it's amazing that it never happened in wrestling up until like 2020. you're right there anyway. Why wouldn't you just
in
the shoulders?
Well, yeah, especially depending upon it does depend upon how you're pinning a man.
Yes.
But if you are kind of doing the proper thing and trying to keep both shoulders down, you do really keep your legs over another man's arm, which really gives them free rein for a low blow.
He's looking at the shoulders, not at the other end, so you can get away with it.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I don't know. It was a very smart finish in that respect. And, you know, Jay getting the clean win, and as I said, imagine we're getting the match at SummerSlam. No, all really well done there.
Yeah. So, and it was kind of interesting. We did not get any threat of a cash in during this main event.
No, I think we're not even going to pretend that Priest is going after Roman Reigns. This is where going backwards is going to hurt us. let's go back to the beginning. Let's go to the beginning.
Okay.
And then go back.
Well, you know, starting with the women then. Or no, hold on. It was the men's match first.
Men's match started, yes. Yeah. Yes, because...
And, yeah, that was one of those things that I guess it dawned on me a little bit later on the show then that there was not going to be a title defense by the women, by one of the singles champions during this show. And that, you know, just because there had been previous cash-ins the night of, especially for the women, that was not an option. But the men's match, they did have that option since both, since they let off the show, really.
Yes, they did, yes. And Damian Priest becomes Senor Money in the Bank. One of the three guys, the people in the match who we noted had a chance, although we probably put him at third.
We did put him at third, or at least I definitely did.
It makes sense for for it to be a Raw guy because the Seth Rollins World Heavyweight Championship is way more up for grabs. And probably will, you know, we could see that thing change hands multiple times while Roman is still champion.
Yeah, like you said, if Roman, yeah, Roman's streak, I suppose it could end with Jay, but there's no way that they're, I would, A, be completely surprised by that, but B, as long as he beats Jay, it's SummerSlam, he does have that thing until the next WrestleMania, I would think. Like, and we, like you said, like, there's only going to be a handful of defenses probably in that. Well, I shouldn't even say a handful. There's probably going to be two defenses in that time period. You know?
Maybe three.
Yeah. If we're pushing it, we might get three. But yeah, it's going to be kind of limited as far as that goes. So yeah, I mean, Seth Rollins, it's one where you give it to him because he's way over currently, but he can also help put someone over that Roman can't do right now, I guess.
Yeah. No, you're Roman gave up the equity that he can give, and he gave it to Jay. You can't do that twice. That twice. You know, rather than losing the title. Seth absolutely could be there to drop the title in the coming months.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be completely surprised if Damian Priest is the guy. Gotten a couple of big pushes. You know, he had the Bad Bunny push, and then he seemed to get de-pushed. He got pushed again a little bit recently. Well, another Bad Bunny push, actually.
Yes. Yeah, I could see it. In other news, Seth Rollins defeated Finn Balor. Seth is still a champion. You know, good match. Priest made his way down to the ring, and in the end, ended up distracting his own man, causing him to delay his coup de grace, which then led to him getting instantly curb stomped and pinned. And of course, Finn and Priest are Finn is not happy with Damian, so we'll stay tuned to see where all that's going to go with the Judgment Day. Seth Rollins' actual opponent, SummerSlam. I actually don't know where they go with that.
It just seems unwise to actually challenge someone to a match with the briefcase.
No, that's a babyface move. You can do that every once in a while. Priest will need to pick a spot. Yes, and that spot once again may come at SummerSlam. But once again, with this heel roster, I don't know who Seth actually defends the title against.
I can't say I really thought about it too hard, quite frankly, about who would be up next for Seth. I wonder what that, because I mean. No one else in the men's ladder match would be one of his opponents.
No. Unless they could try to squeeze Logan Paul again, but I don't think they're going to do that.
Him without the champion, or without the Money in the Bank, I don't think they revisit that. As much as we were talking about that being revisited, it really was incumbent on him having the briefcase. That is a pretty short list, and I mean, I don't think we're gonna see Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins for the championship. It would be an interesting dynamic if it were to happen, because I don't think we've completely smoothed over what happened between those two.
No, I mean, you once again, it's a match you can do down the line, but no, it's Cody and Brock, obviously.
Oh.
So
yeah.
Then it's just I don't know. To have someone they can bring back is, you know, is Randy Orton ready? Bray Wyatt. Oh. Although I'm sure Seth would get PTSD from that one.
It's so interesting. Like, that's one where I just feel like there's such a cloud of uncertainty still around Randy Orton coming back.
Yes, there's a cloud of uncertainty. It's one of the people there's definitely a cloud of uncertainty around. You know, Randy, Big E. I already mentioned Bray Wyatt. You know, nobody really knows the status of any of these people.
Yeah, those are some big names that could be useful in title defense land that are not available. And I mean, they even brought back some people at this pay-per-view, and there still isn't a whole lot to work with. So last thing, I guess, in the about the men's ladder match itself, I don't know. How did you like it on the scale of Money in the Bank matches?
Maybe somewhere in the middle, a little above.
Above.
I think above average. I think I like the action of it. I thought it was nonstop. Nothing. You know. Some good spots. Logan Paul played his role well. I don't really have any real issues with it.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it. I mean, once again, I thought the two Money in the Bank matches were the best matches on the show.
I think I just ended up liking the women's a little bit more. So that was the only thing that I kind of ended up feeling at the end of the evening. And that might have been more just because of their ingenuity and spots than anything else.
That was third to last. We could just jump right into that one.
Instead of just doing ordered, we can jump around. We can do whatever the hell we want to, Chris. But the women's match I thought was fairly creative, especially with the end spot.
Yeah, the end spot was very creative with the handcuffs. We've seen handcuffs used once again. It was during the Thunderdome era. did the spot with Jeff Hardy's earlobe.
Oh,
that was just gross, but.
They might have. I can't remember if they did that or not.
Yeah, I think there was. I think they took. Yeah, they took handcuffs to the. to the ladder. That was. But this was simply, well, first, you know, Trish and Zoe trying to handcuff Becky to the ring post, being unsuccessful. Becky fights them off, ends up.
Yeah.
You know, her and Bailey end up going up the ladder at the same time. They're stopped by Io, who then handcuffs them together so she can grab the briefcase. Io Sky is your Miss Money in the Bank. But earlier in the match, Io was at the top of the ladder until it was tipped over by Bailey, who we do not know whether or not, the mystery is, do we? Of course, Wade Barrett was doing his best to try to make that sound like Bailey didn't know it was Io up there, or it was an accident. Cole was making the point that Io probably didn't actually see who was tipping over the ladder.
I think that to me would be the main thing. If I were looking up at the briefcase, I'm not sure I'd necessarily notice the person down below. And, yeah, she may have turned her head too late to really catch who it is. And it's always a little suspect these days who does watch actual film of these matches and who does not. Wrestling is still not definitely as much film as these guys watch. They have a tendency not to watch the matches that they're actually in to find out what happened. So yeah, I mean, they've been building towards a rift for the two of them. And you know, you can definitely argue it made sense to me for both of them. Like, they're both heels. Like, they should be out for themselves. You know, so I think that Bayley saving herself a shot at the briefcase made sense. And Io taking advantage of the situation. Becky Lynch should not have been running around with that other side of the handcuffs just flopping around there.
Well, she didn't have the key. So she couldn't get them completely off of her. So yeah, no, that made some sense.
Oh no, but I'm just saying that she should have locked the open end. They did make a point though of showing her using the open end, like when she was dragging Bayley down. So you knew that she still had it open. So it, you know, like it yeah. definitely yeah, you're right. it played out correctly. But I'm just saying that maybe the moment that she was not handcuffed to the ring post, she should have like locked the other side as to prevent such a thing from happening. But yeah, she didn't. And she paid for it. Of course, she in no way also she just does not need the Money in the Bank briefcase anyway.
No.
And Io Sky, I believe she was our A number one choice for the both of us. And she, yeah, kind of pulls out a predictable win in my books, but nonetheless everyone was very excited that she was Miss Money in the Bank this year.
Yeah.
So good for her. And like I noted a little bit earlier, she did not have a chance to cash this in because there were no women's championship matches. It also probably helped that they were on as late as they were in the show.
Yeah.
Not quite closing, but no real options in the matches after that to cash it in.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you what. There was some real weirdness with this pay-per-view. I definitely kind of had to do a double take when one Shayna Baszler decided to assault her partner in the middle of a match, thus giving Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez the women's tag team championships yet again.
That was stupid. Completely stupid, illogical. No reason that you could think of to do such a thing during the middle of a match that they were winning, by the way. They were in the process of winning.
I think that's why I needed to rewatch it. Because yeah. I was just completely confused. You know, there was no reason for Shayna to turn on her in that moment.
They've done nothing to set this table at all. They've been best of friends for over a decade and all that. There was some speculation that, you know, once again, speculation that Ronda's on her way out, and what she wants to do before she leaves is put over Shayna. Two problems with that. Number one, beating Ronda means nothing anymore. Two, there's always going to be a ceiling how far they're going to push Shayna on the main roster. Let's be honest.
Well, you know, she's definitely in that. She is not young.
Yeah, she's not young. No, she's not young. She's not Vince's type. Let's just say that.
Yes.
Getting more and more power back.
That is a nice way to put it. As nice as you can, really.
Yeah, there's just, I mean, it's just, it doesn't make sense. The way they did it was dumb. Why not have Liv and Raquel win a clean match and then do that?
Yeah, because Rhonda's the one that takes the pin for some reason or another. Have them have a mix-up, and you know, and Rhonda's the one that gets pinned, and then they end up having beef with each other. Like, yeah, I definitely understand that maybe you didn't have the runway that you wanted to start dropping hints all the time. But there needed to be something in that in the match structure itself that caused the rift.
You're absolutely right. And yet again, Liv Morgan, supposed to be the gallant babyface, is in yet another situation where she backdoors her way into a title and is acting like she like she should, it's a win that she should be proud of.
She has not been put in the best positions.
Like they were celebrating like they just won the Super Bowl. Like you beat somebody 2-on-1 after their own partner beat them up. Whoa.
Yeah, it was a little it's strange for any baby face team to act that way. Especially when you're sitting there in the main shot when the turn happens with shocked face. You know, like you definitely witnessed it. You didn't miss out on something and like come to and see Ronda Rousey down and you're like, oh, okay, well, I'll just pin her. Like, at least you have an out if something like that happens. No out for her whatsoever. So yeah, it's a weird start for the women's tag team champions round two. Not surprising here, Gunther ends up defending his Intercontinental Championship versus Matthew Riddle. Yeah, Riddle's still getting something of a push. He's not getting the Gunther push right now, though.
No. We kind of figured Gunther would win. Match was fine. Maybe it's slightly below my expectations, but once again, with the time they were given and everything else that was happening on this show, it was fine. Of course, the return of one Drew McIntyre blew the roof off the place. Drew picking up right where he left off. Not turning heel at the moment, just picking up where he left off with Gunther, because the WrestleMania match ended up a triple threat where he didn't get pinned, so he's still got a claim.
The, like you said, storyline just kind of picked up where it before he got injured and had to take a little bit of time off here. So, yeah, I guess I'm not surprised. McIntyre is one of the few guys that you could have him pin Gunther and you wouldn't think too much of it. And you could still have Gunther move on to a championship type role, you know, heavyweight championship type of role after that. Especially since, like you said, the heels are lacking and Gunther is one of those people. Of course, to me, if he does face one Seth Rollins, it feels like that's when you have Seth Rollins lose. But maybe we're getting a little ahead of ourselves at that point. Solid win for Gunther. I did see that it was under 8 minutes, and yeah, that's not a whole lot of time to put into even a good match. I did get a kick out of Cody Rhodes versus Dominic Mysterio on a scale of 1 to 10. How disappointed are you that Brock Lesnar did not show up and cost Cody Rhodes this match?
Maybe a 4. As the match is going on, you realize it just wasn't the place for that. I mean, granted, with all the surprises they sprinkled throughout the evening, maybe it could have been justified, but you could hold off on Brock till Monday or the next Monday. I know they sometimes like to put that holiday Monday Raw in a bit of a deep freeze and not have too much development, so but we'll see about that. Once again, a very, very basic match here. Cody just wins. You know, there is no real shenanigans here. it was fine for what it was, but what it was also nothing much.
It was just kind of was what it was. Like it, they did a good job of playing up chicken shit Dominic during the match, and yeah, he pretty much got his ass handed to him when he was actually in the ring, which is fine.
Yeah.
Surprise the number two of the night. It was one that I was baffled by. I went on to Twitter earlier today and saw Io Sky taking a picture with one John Cena. And I got confused. After I watched the pay-per-view, I was less confused how this had happened.
Yeah, no. They got John Cena to show up at Money in the Bank. I imagine it's likely a situation where he's already filming a movie or something in England, so...
That was my assumption that was that he was somewhere within the vicinity and could make an easy trip to London.
He definitely pleasantly surprised the audience, teasing WrestleMania in London, which has been something that's been probably talked about for probably, I don't know, for like a decade maybe, or more. Obviously it can't happen until at least 2025, but I could see it. Not well, I imagine they would run Wembley. And I am not well versed on the weather in England in April.
Well, I'll tell you what, they play soccer through the winter, there. So it does tend to be a little more mild than our climate, though there is a chance of snow. But I think by the time April's rolling around, you're not in bad shape. I've been to London once. Did not get to see as much of it as I would like. I was always enjoying with the graphics for Money in the Bank. They kept on showing... St. Paul's Cathedral, which is done by the architect Sir Christopher Wren, who helped rebuild London after it burnt down in the 17th century? Yeah, the 1600s. And I got to go to that when I was there, but there are some other spots in London that I would love to spend a little more time at, quite frankly, and that would be quite a draw should WrestleMania be in London.
I don't know. I guess I could consider that. But Grayson Waller was making some points about the weather in Australia. It's not like he was wrong.
They have done a pretty nice job, honestly, of getting Grayson Waller involved in the product while, much like Indy Hartwell, he recovers from an injury that he sustained right before leaving NXT.
Yeah. So we got Grayson Waller confronting John Cena. It eventually got physical with Grayson attacking Cena from behind, only to take an AA. Cena leaves happily. The crowd is happy. It was a definition of a nice surprise.
That was a nice surprise, and yeah, that does it for the pay-per-view itself. Honestly. Wow. Yeah, I mean, we covered Seth. The women's match was the next one up, and then Seth and Finn, and then the main event. Because there really wasn't that much to be said about Seth and Finn. As much as I love both of those two as in-ring performers, not one of their better outings, and it did seem like we talked about earlier, that the main point of that really was Damian Priest costing Finn Balor the match.
Yes.
So there is that. Yeah. You know, there was something that that I guess I'll ask you about. Did you watch AEW Collision? I know that both of us were in a wedding situation on Saturday of this past weekend here. Did you watch any AEW Collision, sir?
I watched some of the... I watched some clips on YouTube. That's as far as I got.
Yeah, I did not get to get to any of them. I decided not to watch that for the show. Getting SmackDown and Money in the Bank done before recording this here podcast was quite enough wrestling for me. Though I would imagine I will try to catch Collision sometime while I'm working on corrections tomorrow.
Okay, so I won't spoil any of it for you.
Yeah, you know, I did pull things up to see what the matches were, and it just looks like it only has three matches listed in the headline here, which is not a whole lot of matches for a 2-hour show. So, but yeah, we can cover that some other time, or maybe Jeremy and I will cover that. Anything else to talk about, I guess, before heading on out of here? I mean, this could be a short show because of weird holiday is working.
What about our two championship matches from SmackDown that did not?
Yeah, the two matches that we know why they... This is WWE at its finest, and something that AEW would have tried to jam onto there. I know that the WWE is calling them premium live events these days because, you know, we're not really paying for them per se, since we're watching them on a service. But AEW probably would have tried to jam the two championship matches onto the main card and made this pay-per-view at least 5 hours long. I am glad they decided to put them on SmackDown itself. The first one up, pretty deadly, Elton Prince and Kit Wilson taking on Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Not much of a surprise. Pretty Deadly is an enjoyable tag team. I hope to see them with the tag championships at some juncture. That juncture was not going to be right now.
Yeah, I'm not as high on them as you are. I think there's a possibility that they will join the long list of goofy gimmicks that were given 2 months and then thrown away. Because they've already lost their first tag team championship challenge, and it's just like, where do you go from here?
Yeah, that is honestly the curse of the new tag team in the WWE, is that a lot of times they end up just being fodder for whomever the tag champs are at the time.
Yeah, it was not the time to take the titles off of Kevin and Sammy at all. You know, they should certainly be in a featured match at SummerSlam. Don't know exactly who they could go against. Obviously, they've been feuding with Imperium for the most part on Raw, while also appearing on SmackDown. There's two members of the Judgment Day you could put together. There's multiple team matches they could do. So they certainly got options. I mean, I think the days of tag team championship matches main eventing are about over.
They are definitely taking a hiatus for some measure of time here.
Yeah. But again, Kevin and Sammy, still very fun. Still, you know, great to see them as a team. You know, the landscape of WWE right now is such that, you know, they're the, you know, essentially the number 3 and 4 or 3A, 3B baby faces in the entire company.
Oh, right.
But there's really nowhere for them to be in the singles ranks currently in the landscape, so they might as well keep being tag champs. It does elevate the tag titles. I mean, they've done a good job elevating the tag titles between the Usos and the and this Kevin and Sammy run.
For sure. And, yeah, because everyone's been pretty daggone popular between both of those teams. So that that does help raise championship awareness. The other championship match that happened on the Smack of Downs was Charlotte Flair taking on Asuka for the WWE Women's Championship match. And almost from Jump Street, you knew that some shenanigans were going to happen in this match because Bianca Belair, though she was banned from ringside, did the smart thing that everyone has done in wrestling over a long time period that I've been watching at least. They bought a ticket so that they could sit front row and then get involved in the matchup.
Yeah. It was insanely predictable. Made Bianca look kind of very heelish. The provocation was very small to jump the rail and do what she did. And then Asuka, for what their standards have been, I think Asuka and Charlotte also had a clunky match for whatever reason too.
Yeah, it was for a match, especially with Asuka, I would say. Like, Charlotte's been kind of interesting during her return runs here recently when she hasn't had a lot of time in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah, they wrestled each other enough that it should be second nature, but it really was. Their timing was off on a number of things.
Yeah.
It was just not a good match. I mean, we're obviously getting a triple threat match at SummerSlam, which that should be really good. It won't be, unless they just don't. The three of them just don't vibe for whatever reason.
Right.
I don't necessarily expect that. I think the big pay per view matches, usually deliver in that respect. They come prepared for those. Yeah, once again. It was a means to an end, and that's really all it was. It was not the most well thought out, well played out series of events ever. Once again, because I think that Bianca really did come off pretty heelish.
She's
definitely supposed to be the babyface here, and if we're not careful, I could see Asuka getting the most cheers heading into SummerSlam. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's just a weird situation. I know that Jeremy and I talked about it a little, but none of them are likable right now. Asuka is using mist in people's eyes to win. Charlotte just comes back and is like, yeah, I'm the number one contender all the time. Like, what the hell? You know, just being her pretty much bitchy entitled self. And Bianca Belair has gotten exasperated very quickly in this whole situation. So, yeah, like, none of them are really coming off well, and it's entirely possible that the crowd does seem a little more behind Asuka than the other two. I would not be surprised if she ends up with more cheers when we end up at SummerSlam.
No.
You know, even if, again, definitely being heelish. When you're using mist, you're heel. I mean, that's just all there is to it. So, yeah, and there wasn't, I'm looking through, I mean, SmackDown kind of had a lot of stuff going on, but, the Usos kind of took up the main, the Bloodline storyline took up the main event.
Well, it was all in service of Money in the Bank, which has also already happened, so there's a real point to talking about it.
yeah, because everything else really was a feeder match. So, yeah, I think it's, time to get out of here now, then. And bell time beer on my end, I did not have one during the show here. It was because I had a couple earlier in the day. took a nice long walk with the wife and stopped into Buckeye Lake Brewing and had a pontoon pale ale, which is one of my more favorite pale ales. If you're just going for a nice mild hoppy beer, that is one of the standards around here that I still drink on a regular basis from one of the breweries. And their Triumph Hazy IPA was also very good. I believe that was the first time I had that one today. So, good brewery. They are out on quite literally Buckeye Lake, which is just east of town here. And it's a good place to go. The snack shack that is attached also has very tasty food. So, should you find yourself in around Columbus, Ohio, that is a suggest both for food and for beer. So that is the hashtag Belltime Beer of the show. My name on the Twitters is at DeFrango11. His is at StuntCali. The brand is at StuntGranny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Download us at any number of locations otherwise, whether it's Spotify, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, or Google. Have a good night, grandkids.
Later.